I want to make a mention before I start. We're going to be in Numbers, of course, chapter 2, when we talk about the army. In relationship to the songs we just had for our singing session, it's these songs we have for the Passover season. And when you look at these songs we have, it shows you a picture. I think maybe some of you did not realize that, how it helps. The first song, of course, is Teshuvah. We're returning back to what it is tethered, and we're going to mend it back together. The tethered means basically the Old Testament being put back together again in your mind, in your heart. Find out what it says. The second one is the Lamb of God. So when we return back to it, we find something about the Lamb of God. What's the main subject there? That you are washed clean by the blood of the Lamb. That means the past is over with by the blood of the Lamb. However, the Messiah also said, you are now clean through the Word. And we'll talk about that tonight. And the last one is, Adonai Lai Eloi, which means, why am I afraid? God is with me on my side. And then you have this song of triumph. The enemy is being removed, being eliminated off of your shoulders. He's gone. It's like he's being drowned and gotten rid of. And then we sing hallelujah, praise. You know, it's like crossing over the Red Sea, and you've got this hallelujah song, and you're praising Thong. The last song is Kadosh. Now, I know it says holy, 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 but the main line in that whole book is, he who was and is to come. These songs we sing, I wanted to bring this out to you on the, I put these together some years ago, is a pattern all the way down to waiting for the Messiah to come. I thought that maybe you might want to be interested in that. I thought it was fascinating.
Numbers chapter 2. The Lord spoke to Moshe and Aharon, saying, the people of Israel shall camp each by his own standard, with the banners of their fathers' houses. They shall camp facing the tent of meeting on each side. Those to camp on the east side, toward the sunrise, shall be the standard of the camp of Yehuda by their companies, the chief of the people of Yehuda being Nashon, the son of Amminadab, his company, as listed, being 74,600. Those to camp next to him shall be the tribe of Issachar, the chief of the people of Issachar being Nathaniel, the son of Zuar, his company, as listed, being 54,400. Then the tribe of Zebulun, the chief of the people of Zebulun being Eliab, the son of Helon, his company, as listed, being 57,400. All those who camped, listed by the camp of Yehuda, by their companies, were 186,400. They shall set out first on the march. On the south side shall be the standard of the camp of Reuben, by their companies, the chief of the people of Reuben being Eleazar, the son of Shedur, his company, as listed, being 46,500. And those to camp next to him shall be the tribe of Shimon, the chief of the people of Shimon being Shalumiel, the son of Zerushadai, his company, as listed, being 59,300. Then the tribe of God, the chief of the people of God being Eliasaph, the son of Reuel, his company, as listed, being 45,650. All those listed of the camp of Reuben by their companies were 151,450. They shall set out second. Then the tent of meeting shall set out with the camp of the Levites in the midst of the camps as they camp. So shall they set out, each in position, standard by standard. On the west side shall be the camp of the standard of the camp of Ephraim by their companies, the chief of the people of Ephraim being Elishama, the son of Amihud, his company, as listed, being 40,500. And next to him shall be the tribe of Manasseh, the chief of the people of Manasseh, being Gamaliel, the son of Pedahuzer, his company, as listed, being 32,200. Then the tribe of Benjamin, the chief of the people of Benjamin, being Abidan, the son of Gideoni, his company as listed being 34,400. All those listed of the camp of Ephraim by their companies were 108,100. They shall set out third on the march. On the north side shall be the standard of the camp of Dan by their companies, the chief of the people of Dan being Ahiezer, the son of Amishadai, his company as listed being 62,700. And those to camp next to him shall be the tribe of Asher, the chief of the people of Asher being Pagiel, the son of Okron, his company as listed being 41,500. Then the tribe of Naphtali, the chief of the people of Naphtali being Ahira, the son of Enan, his company as listed being 53,400. All those listed of the camp of Dan were 157,600. They shall set out last, standard by standard. These are the people of Israel as listed by their fathers' houses. All those listed in the camps by their companies were 603,550. But the Levites were not listed among the people of Israel, as the Lord commanded Moshe. Thus did the people of Israel according to all that the Lord had commanded Moshe. So they camped by their standards, and so they set out, each one in his clan, according to his father's house.
Any comments? Rebel?
Any reason why certain tribes were situated with the other tribe members?
Why each one of the tribes would sort round circle? That's what this is about today.
Right.
We'll talk about that.
Okay.
You know, and it says that they each camped by their standard.
Correct.
Okay, I want to know what that means.
It's like a flag.
The standard just meant their flag.
It's like a flag.
Oh, it didn't mean like...
In warfare, when we go to war, we have, in the old days, the guy, he holds the flag up there. That's called the standard. So no one knows, they know who the army is. They recognize who is there and who's approaching it. It's not a, it was an onslaught. It's just a pattern by which you have your own slot. Each one had their own standards, so each one went and by order in the direction. Yes. Next question.
Did each tribe have their own flag?
Each tribe had their own flag.
Okay.
Well, as I see it, these standards may have done a double duty. In time of war, you know where you are supposed to go for war, but when you're just camping and you're just waiting to go, imagine you go out for the day, you need to find out how to get back home.
And so you had your flag there, yeah. Or some symbol of some kind of symbol. I don't know whether we would call it a flag or not, but a symbol like a flag or something like the flag represents a standard. Or identification card, identification who you are and where you're supposed to be camped at. Because God has his army set and they're well organized. And no one moves from their post, technically speaking. People may, but God's army does not. Next question. This is not going to be a very long discussion today because I went through great detail on the first chapter of all the names. You had a question?
So as you're moving along here, as you're naming off the different tribes, like Judah and whatnot,
right.
He mentions like Nashon, the son of Arambabab, or
right.
Those names with significance to those for each.
They're significant, and we will, when I read mine, we read the names, not the names of the people, but the meaning of the names. So you see a pattern. One thing that's fascinating with God is a pattern being told. He tells us exactly who goes out first. Well, it's going to be Judah. Who? What does that mean? Okay? So we'll have to look at this pattern and see the order in which, quote, God advances his army, end of quote. Remember, God is the commanding general. And they don't move until he moves. When he moves, in a sense, he's a frontliner. He goes out right in front. And good, because, you know, he's got the full power and strength to protect his army, too. But God wants the individual people to be able to become brave and courageous and strong. And so now he has them organizing themselves as a what's called, you know, in the book of Exodus, they called it, came out in their own army. Now, it was a thought after this was established. The pattern was the same thing. But the first army that left Egypt was the army of Reuben. Remember? Interesting. It wasn't Judah, it was Reuben. So it's funny to pay attention exactly how those patterns went, both in the event of leaving Egypt and now surrounding the general, the commanding general, or as to say, the creator of heaven and earth. So let's just go in verse, let's start with verse 3. Talk about the east side. Now we have that this is kind of rectangular, or some people believe it was a square, but anyway, had four corners. Okay. And there was opening on each one, opening in one of the corners. And so what happened here, that on the east side, there was, the banner was what? He says, and toward the rising sun, so the sun's coming east, we're not talking about how any other matter except the rising sun, it shall be the standard of the camp of the hand out to present. Hand out to present. That's what Judah means. His hands out there to present something or to receive something. And now we have the word praise translated into this thing, but it's really not. He's got one hand out there, and biblically means an open one. It's not closed, it's open. Not hands, but hand. He's got one hand out there, because otherwise it'd be a plural term. It's not, it's a singular verb. And he's going to receive something, probably from the commander. That is, the one that is the general. And then we go out the next one, and next one it says, put out the pitch throughout their armies, and the diligent observer. All right, Nishan means diligent observer, one who watches. Remember, we thought that meant someone like a soothsayer. But you go into the Hebrew and find out one who watches and observes things. So he's the one who watches what's going on. And he's diligent at it, very careful. Okay, that is not the man, the army, the name. You understand what I'm saying? Don't associate with people. Associate with how God works, how God sets up his army, how God runs his army, how God commands his army. And you can tell it by the names. The hands out to receive something or to take command. Now, who took the command? When did he take the command? Or was he going to take the command? Well, first, then I had to explain what the Yahuwah. What does he receive? The scroll, the orders. He receives the orders from the commander who's sitting on his throne. Do you understand what I'm saying? We're not talking about people here. We're talking about the army. And the first one who takes charge is the one who receives the orders. Do you understand? If you can see that in your brain, see that in the name, see that what's going on is, and is open to receive something. And what does he do? He now gives commands as he peels off each one of the orders that's listed within that. All right? It's a picture of the future by how the army is going to work. And you kind of relate it to the Messiah when you look at it and thought, these names are just not names that people just happen to pick up and use. If it was that God just happened to say, oh, I have to figure out how to use that guy's name. No, this is not coincidental. In my personal opinion, Richard H.'s personal opinion, the names are not coincidental. And the names that are listed here in numbers is more important than the number itself. It's the names. And what it tells you, that God's army is a lot bigger and massive than we might even think. It's not about the army. It's about God and how he's going to go to war. In the prophet, it said he is one of a man of war. Now, if he's a man of war, what does that tell us? He's a man of war. That's what it tells us, right? Not that hard to figure out. So once again, I'm going to go through the definitions of the names as I read this. So I'll go back down to verse 3. And on the east side, toward the rising of the sun, the standards of the camp of hand out to present, pitch through their armies, throughout their armies, and the diligent observer, the son of my kin is willing, with the captain of the children of the handout, the hand that's out. The name of the men? It's verse 3, okay? I went through this thing last week, and I don't want to spend a lot of time, but we've done this many times before, I know that. But just means that the hand is out to receive something, okay? Next one comes in is that the one is a diligent observer. Observer of what? Of what was given in the hand, okay? What's the next one? And they're willing to do it. They're willing to go whatever that was in the hands of the man or the individual now who received the orders. Do you understand so far? Okay. And then he goes into and it says, the next, let's drop down now to verse 5. And those of the pitch of the tent of him to the tribe of, there is recompense. Something's going to cost. God's going to pay a price, or a price is going to be paid. All right. Next one is given of God. The recompense given of God, and it's insignificant. It will be not important. And we say, what does that mean? Okay. We went through the scene before last week. I don't want to have to go through them all over again. But the insignificant one seemed like insignificant to what? The army is going to do something what seems to be unimportant. Has no value. Just really, don't worry. Don't sweat it. Don't sweat it. Don't worry about it. It doesn't matter. And the other one can be that the Messiah himself is insignificant. The commander who's got the thing in his hand, Yeshua who's got the command in his hand, is that's unimportant. Now, we have to stop and ask yourself a question. How many people understand the book of Revelations? And it's so complicated. It seemed like, oh, let's go someplace else. We'll go someplace else. We'll go here. We'll go there. We'll go here. Let's leave the Revelations alone. We don't know what it means. Right? It's not that valuable to me. Something else is more valuable to me, but not, of course, the army. And Revelation talks about the army. What it does. All right. Then we go down to verse 7. And the tribe of exalted, God is Father and strength. That's what it says in Hebrew. When you just take the names and break them down to the verb contents of it. God works with verbs. Almost exclusively with verbs. They're action things or the description of something. Most of them is always action. And so we look at this thing, we see the army happening and what's going to take place. And we have a picture. Now, these are all on what side? They're on the east side. Why are they on the east side? Why aren't they on the north side? Why aren't they on the south side? Why aren't they on the east side? Why are they on the east side? Sorry, what? Facing the rising sun. Now, we're not talking about, you know, paganology here. We're talking about what? And how is Messiah going to come? From the east to the west. So the first thing they're going to see is the Messiah coming. All right? So that tells you the direction. And we can think he's going to come down. Right? His feet's going to come down the Mount of Olives. Well, in the book of Joel, he doesn't go down the Mount of Olives right away. And the book of Romans, the book of Revelation, he doesn't come down the Mount of Olives right away. He goes where? In the book of Job, he's in Jerusalem, not in Jerusalem, he's in Judea. He fights for Judea first. Then he goes to Jerusalem. Yes.
Isn't that main fight, though, in Megiddo? Isn't that Judea?
I'm not going to go into prophecy. I'm just telling you how it works.
But that's considered Judea.
It could be.
Isn't it?
Megiddo, I think, is far north. In Israel, the northern tribe was Israel. We're talking about the land, the southern area belonged to Judea. Okay? Because that's basically where it was always established, you know. Here's Judah and here's Israel. And Israel was main battles for Israel, but not the main battles for Judah. What were the main battles for Judah? Well, you're going to have to kind of read David again and figure out where he went to fight. And he was fighting for the land of Judah. Constantly fighting for the land of Judah. Not for the land of Israel up north, but for the land of Judah, even though it wasn't Israel at that point in time. He fought for, and he's the one who established something called the city of Jerusalem. Remember? There's a pattern that we need to kind of take a look at and understand the best that we can understand. And the numbers are kind of large, or sometimes there's a their way of counting them, but I'm not going to go that today. The Jewish scholars have a different way of looking at these numbers, and I'm not worried about that. And the next one is south. Now, the next one in order, once the east is established and know where their camp is to be and what their job is, now comes the south end of the tent. And who's supposed to be there? All right. Now, what does Reuben mean? The builder. All right. So we'll take a look at these things so we kind of picture why they're in the south and not in the north or in the east or in the west, but in the south. Okay. We have to kind of picture how God works, not how we think he ought to work. We need to see how he works and not try to interpret, I think God thinks, and I think God thought, and I think God thinks it. Let's just take a look and say why he did it. We have to go to him to understand. We can't go to one another to understand. The only one that could teach us to understand is the commanding general. Does that make sense to you? He is establishing his army. He calls them the army. All his men are called military men. They're going to go to battle. They're going to go to war. Now, what happens with the book of 10th chapter, book of Numbers, it gives you the orders and how they advance. We're not in 10th chapter yet. We're just sitting where God has stationed them. That's it. And now it comes the south side, the standard of the camp of a builder. The rock is God, casting forth fire. Oh. Now the south is to do something. The rock is God, casting forth fire. Now we could talk that literally means literal fire, or another kind of fire. The kind of fire that God fires with is not the kind that you have to light a match to. It just comes from him. He produces the fire. And it's to be the tribe of God hears, safety of God, rock of Almighty. Understand that? Then the next one is the troop or regiment, put it that way. Regiment, God has added, they're known of God. They know what their job is to be done. Now, we're not talking about people. I read over and over again, and I know that we get into involved with how people are. And I keep trying to get across that this is not about people. It's about God's army. He's describing to us how his army is, how powerful it is, and how destructive it is. And since you can't attack it, his army is in a place of safety, or safe of peace, we call it today, which is not peace. We think something different word peace. But in Hebrew, the breaking down word means place of safety. His army is safe, period. You can't be attacked, okay? You know, remember the book of Joel? The army of God keeps going forward, and you just can't kill them. They just keep going forward, house to house, house to house, house to house. Well, that's God's army. It doesn't say it's Israel's army, doesn't say it's Judah's army, doesn't say it's the United States American army, it says it's God's. So we have a picture here with that statement, and looking at it, it says, okay, since that is the army of God, how does God's army work? This is telling us in the book of Numbers. And we get concerned with the number of count. And the number of count just tells you what? God has a number, or greater, than we can imagine. Let's go on. Up down to, this is going to be really short because I want to spend more, not much time on this one. Now on the west side, that means toward the Mediterranean Sea, in a sense, on the west side, the standard of the double heap. God has heard and splendor. God has heard splendor. Is going to mean, what does splendor mean? Yes. Levites are not involved.
But they don't have a meaning.
They're not involved at all. Not in the army. He specifically says in this chapter, do not count the Levites. They have a different function. The Levites are with the commanding general. Not the people of Israel. But the high priest is with the commanding general. And those that the high priest has with him are with the commanding general. At the place of the book of Revelation, I don't want to go there real quickly. Don't go there, but just understand that. One of the, quote, houses of God or assembly of God, it says, you are of little strength, because they don't have the military strength. They don't have the power. But you're going to be the temple. The strong, thus holding up the temple, and no one will remove you from it. Okay? So there is one within the temple, or within the house of God. Now we go on to, and then Manasseh says, verse 3 and 20, and by him, by the tribal of to forget, payment of God, rock is preserved. Forget? Forget what? What does it tell you to forget? We're talking God and his army. What is God forgetting? That's not what it says. We're going to war here. What is he forgetting? What is Messiah forgetting? What is this army supposed to forget? What does God have in mind? Do you have any idea? Huh? No idea. So let's go back again now. Double heap. God has heard. Splendor. To forget. Payment of God. God is preserved. Or the rock is preserved. What's the rock? And we have that back here in one of them, in the people of the south. And one of the men is known as the rock of God, casting forth fire. So, is he forgetting something? Well, the word doesn't really mean like forget, I forgot. It's the reason why he was given that name is for the past is not going to matter. That's a pretty powerful statement. I'm going to forget the past and go forward. I don't care what takes place here. I'm going to do my destruction. And the army of God, and it says what day when he starts in, how does the prophet describe the day when he starts his movement? Day of joy, happiness, jumping up and down and worshiping and singing songs. It's what? Gloom. Bad stuff. All right? Now we don't see hope in chapter 1 or chapter 2 because we eliminate ourselves with just the army, what's going to happen. Or how God runs his army. I could go quickly and move someplace else, but I have a pattern. Look, I think God has a pattern here for us to observe, pay attention to exactly what it's all about. So we can be part of the army and not let the army come against us. All right? Just what I said. Apostle Paul said something that we are to do. Put on our best tux and go dancing. Right? Go have a party. Go swim. What do you say? Put on the whole armor of God, which already was spoken of, by the way, in the Old Testament. For what? Because you like to wear the armor? For a battle. And sometimes we, as people who want to believe God, now we are past the point of, let's say, step number 1, repentance. Step number 2, forgiveness. Step number 3, baptism. Step number 4, all the way that says in Hebrews, let's put those things behind us and let's go forward. Because what's happening in your world, in my world, we are going forward. I hope to be able to explain this more, not in detail, but in insight tonight when we have our Passover stuff. Now along comes the one at the right hand. His father is judgment, and they're cutting a path. Now when we talk about judgment, we think of what? This is in the west side now. He's cutting the path. To what? This is a war now. This is an army now.
What name? Benjamin.
Whom?
Benjamin cutting a path?
No. This is the man that God chose.
So who's cutting a path?
Well, it says right down there. First, we have Benjamin, which is right hand, and then father of the judgment, right? And his father's name was cutting a path. The third name in the list. I find it very fascinating when God uses three names in the list, we should pay attention to those three names. The pattern. God always shows us by a pattern. All right? We're learning things, trying to understand things that where God is trying to, not God's trying, actually he's written it down, that God has opened up, helping us to see. We have to ask ourselves questions. Will we understand it all? No. Can we understand some of it? Yes. And as much as God loves to understand some of it, we should thank God for it. We don't have to be afraid of God's army, because the book of Numbers is telling us how he's going to build it, and how he's going to use it, and what it's for. Right? Pat, okay, when the army has to go forward, and guess what happens? If there is no roadway or highway, we send out certain men in our military to make a path. They are called engineers in military fashion. If you can't cross a river, guess what? The engineers build a passing. It's only temporary to get the army across. The Army Corps of Engineers, that's what they do at war. They build bridges, they build highways, they'll even make a runway for an airplane. So only temporary for a short period of time. They're very ingenious in how the military works. You know, we have this lake up here called Sonoma Lake. Do you know who built it? Army Corps of Engineers. That's what they do. Well, sometimes it's two human beings. They make mistakes too. But we're just thinking about that when you're building a path, you're building a way in which the army can keep on going. Now, this is the South Army, right? No, the West Army. Now, what comes next?
North.
The North.
If the army is moving eastward...
Does it say moving eastward? Does it say they're moving eastward at all?
Oh, okay.
Now, we assume that... they're just camped on the east side. Now, God could tell them to move north, south, east, or west. The first one to move out would be the ones on the east side, and then the south side, then the west side, then the north side. And we think, well, that one's going to go east, that one's going to go south, that one's going to go west, that one's going to north. That's not what it says. I'm not saying that God cannot do that. I'm just saying that that's not what it says. All right. It can mean that, but I don't have that inside information from God. I'm just telling you what I understand and I see right now. That's all. I keep asking God every time I research these things over and over and over again, I find something I didn't know before. Not a major thing, just something I didn't notice before. It helped me to understand, because I know that God has in mind, tell me exactly what these are all about and what it's for. I turned the wrong page here, didn't I? Went too far. And then the fourth division, which is on the north side. Now, let's call that. The stand of the trump, the scamp of the judge, brother of helper, people almighty. Verse 25. Judge. The judgment is coming. All right. And we're not talking about the man, Dan. We're not talking about the people of the tribe of Dan. We're talking about the army of God. And the army of God is going to make judgment. Because he got the order to do so. Yes. So I'm sorry, what? Almighty. Very specifically, that's the way his name means. If you look at the name, it means it has the word Almighty in it. I think it's a very fat name of by itself. Now, remember, word Almighty does not refer to the guy who can do anything on the sun he wants. Why was he called Almighty? Come on, you heard me. He did what? The delusion. Because technically it means in Hebrew, the deluger, the one who brought forth the flood and destroyed everything. In Hebrew, he's called the deluger, the one who deludes, devolves, drowns, does destruction. And he's known as El Shaddai from that point on. That's why Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob would have been more familiar with the term El Shaddai, because they just came from a few hundred years from the flood. It wasn't a thing of theory of evolution in those days. It wasn't a theory of no, there was no God. There was one, and he did brought forth total destruction. So there, the nation back in those days, they knew. Every one of those old writings from especially the Middle East, they always talk about a great flood. Regardless of their religious background, regardless of what tribe they came from, regardless of anything, you can find that in China. Talk about a great flood that took and drowned, did a tremendous amount of damage. And in the China writings, it also says there was 8 people who survived. Very fascinating to know those things. So the world was very much aware of the power of the creator of heaven and earth. Today, we don't care. It's unimportant. It's insignificant. It has no value. Remember the Titanic? You've heard it before, right? And he said, not even God can sink it. And made and buried, what happened to it? Down it went. And all he did was use ice. Just use ice. He didn't bring down fire from above. He didn't bring in a bunch of, armies. He just brought in some ice. Okay, boom, down it goes. In one way, it's kind of comical, but in another way, it's like, don't mock him. No matter how unimportant you are or how important you are. Because he can destroy people with a bunch of ice and a bunch of water. You think he cannot destroy people with a bunch of wind? Or no wind whatsoever? See, those are in the hands of the Creator. They're not in the hands of man. Man cannot create a flood. Man cannot create a windstorm. Man cannot create a volcano. Man cannot create. Now, they can create something like an atom bomb that wipes out people, but it doesn't have the power, because God can stop it anytime he wants. He has more power than an atom bomb. More power than all our military combined together. All the arsenal we can picture up together cannot fight the power of God. All God has to do is use the tools that we already have around about us all the time. Nothing can stop him. That's his army. It's who he is. How he acts. And this should give us assurance. This should give us comfort. This should give us thanksgiving that God is protecting us, preserving us with his army. All right? We are being protected by his army. The commanding in general is in charge. Let me go on. And the next one is, and I had to go into the Hebrew root word. Okay? Hebrew root word. All right? And he says, in the encampment of them on the tribe of to go straight or walk straight, happening of God to make trouble. Ooh, to make trouble. God's army is going to go straight, and it's going to happen from God himself. And when it's finished, what's involved? Trouble. Now we have this song we've been singing, right? You know the song we had just sung today? It was, the triumph. And in that song it says, he has drowned in the sea. The Lord has done this. And so we need to look and see not how terrified we should be of God, but how awestruck we should be of him and his army in protecting us, protecting the people. Now, we know we have faults, we have difficulties, we have sometimes we have our own little personal spats and disputes and arguments with one another. That's something we have to work with on ourselves to overcome. And we know that also if we partook of the Passover in a, quote, unworthy manner, in a quote, if we don't judge ourselves, guess who judges us? The Son of God. He doesn't kill us. He just judges us, and he'll be judged justly. Yes.
If you can help me out with this, too, when Paul was talking about that, not eating unworthy, was that the context is because they were partying?
They were partying, had too much wine, too much, they were eating that. And just like we're talking about, they just did it on their own. They didn't pay attention to how serious that supper really was.
Right, because the Christian world has really gone pretty...
Well, yeah, I'm not worried about the Christian world. I'm worried about what we need to do.
No, well, I'm just saying, that using that word unworthily, I mean...
Oh, yes, yes.
And
well, then no one should ever take bread and wine for the rest of their entire life. Right? If that's true. If who is worthy? Not a single one. Who is worthy? Even the Messiah. Was he worthy? He's the one that gave it to the people. He's the one that gave it to the apostles. It didn't say he took bread and he ate it himself. It didn't say he took the wine and drank some of it himself. He broke the bread, gave it to them, they ate it. Then he put the cup, gave it to them for them to drink. Doesn't say he drank it, doesn't say he ate it. It's for us. Because why? The bread represents the death, and the wine represents the New Testament. Okay? And it's for the people, for the apostles, for mankind. And so we have to go serious in this thing. So what is it all about? What's it for? And back in those days, I don't know the situation. I wasn't there. I didn't live there. I don't know the society. I don't know the people. I never met them. And there's nothing written about them in history. Just note what Paul said. That's it. That's all we have. Okay? I'll let that rest. The next one is verse 29. I'm finished here pretty quick. In the tribe of the wrestling, the one who wrestles or fights, the brother of the unpleasant, having eyes to understand or eyes to see. So a wrestler or a fighter, brother, is going to be unpleasant. The spider is going to be very unpleasant. That is, not he, the army of God is the one who fights, who wrestles. And guess what he's going to do? When he wins, it's very unpleasant. Was it pleasant for Jacob when an angel wrestled with him? Rest of his life he was wounded, right? It wasn't very pleasant. No, I'm not saying that's what this represents, but keep that part in mind. All right? But one thing that Jacob did understand is why his name was the way it was changed. He understood it completely. We sometimes don't know that. That's okay. And now, that being said, what do you see now? What do you understand now a little bit from chapter 1 and chapter 2? What's the purpose of chapter 1? What's the purpose of chapter 2?
1 and 2 was to show us how the army would be organized. No,
yes.
Am I wrong?
No, you got it. Tell how he, that's how his plan, puts a plan of attack. Okay. It's really already there. All right? Plan of attack is written. Now, we can speculate by going to Revelations or going to Daniel or going to Isaiah or going to Jeremiah or going anywhere else, what is happening. I'm not going to go there. You know why? I'm not involved with that. I'm involved with what is written here. You all are free to go wherever you want to go, see what you want to see, and picture what you want to picture. I'm not going to tell you yes or no. I don't have insight to the prophets. I really don't. That's something that God has not given me. I do have insight about specific portions of some. And maybe it's because in the very beginning of my youth, I saw a pattern. And I didn't quite understand it when I was young. But I'm sort of seeing it clearer now. It doesn't matter. If there's no more questions, yes.
These divisions, is there any rhyme or reason as to why some are mated up or matched up with others?
That would mean it was written?
Yeah, no.
Oh, yo.
Like on the east side, we had Judah, Issachar, Zebulun.
Right, right, right.
Why are these guys together? Like that.
All right. That's a good question. That's a good question, isn't it? Okay, let's talk about that. Okay. Judah, right? Well, the on the army of Judah and the tribe of Issachar and the tribe of Zebulun. Why are they on the east side? Who is the mother of Issachar? Who is the mother of Zebulun? Who? Leah. All right. So you'll see a pattern that's going to come. On the south side, see if this falls through. All right. See if the pattern is the same or another pattern shows up. Here on the south side, you have Reuben, Simeon, and Gad. I'm sorry, what? Two of them were the sons of the mother was whom? And who was Gad's mother? One whose servant? Leah's servant. You see a pattern? What comes first? God names what comes first. What comes second? God names what comes second. It's always the three. Let's go to the next one. On the west side, Ephraim, Manasseh, and Benjamin. Who's the mother? All right. Did you see a pattern? So it kind of tells you a little bit where God is at and why not using the people, but what it's all about. And the next one is Dan, Asher, and Naphtali. Who is the mother of Dan? Who is the mother of Asher? Who is the mother of Naphtali? Huh? Now, all of a sudden, does the pattern fit? Or is it a little bit different? Yeah, look it up. Who's the mother of Dan? And who is she? Rachel's. Ah. What about Asher and Naphtali? Who were they? They were the Leah. Or Leah. And see, one made him happy, and that one was wrestling. She also had one more. I had the Levi, but we're not going there today. So you see, not all the patterns exactly the same, but from Dan, who's really from the maid of Rachel, now is connected to. And his name begins with the judge. He's the south. Makes logical sense when you start thinking about that, because on the west, that's where he would normally be, because why? He'd be from the family of Leah, of Rachel, and that servant. Now he's removed from that place and put into the north, away from. And this is the reason why we have a hard understanding about something about the tribe of Dan. I'll wait for your salvation. We've got to be careful how you read that in Hebrew. We won't go there today. I talked about that sometime when we went to Genesis. That kind of explained a little bit. What else is Dan supposed to know? Yes.
Something I was noticing here, in the order that God works is about mercy and judgment, or justice. This is the order of justice first, before mercy comes.
Okay. Because judgment comes in that pattern. What was Dan, according to prophecy, known to do? Not the man. That's his name, Judge. When a judge does something, he does something. What is a judgment of? On what? He attacks. He's like a snake now, and he attacks. And the horse rises up. Who falls off? The rider. And guess what that snake can do? Bite the rider. He's not going to bite the horse. So the name of him being a snake sounds horrible. A snake is a deadly thing. This is a deadly one. And it's going to kill the rider that's on that horse. Do you understand what I'm saying? He's not going to kill the Messiah. He is the judge. He's going to bring forth the final execution, if I can use that word, of the rider that's on that horse. What happened to the rider of that army? What happened to him? He was cast into the sea. Now, I want to be very careful what I'm saying. You don't have to accept anything which I am saying, but I would like for you to pay, if you can, close attention, because my personal opinion, God does not waste his time with names. And I do not believe, my personal opinion, when the ladies named these men, all the sons, that it was an error, a mistake, or coincidental. I think God deliberately had them name them that way for us to see something far deeper than what is there on the surface. I'm going to start looking at the names, what they mean, the base of it. It tells you more about God and his son than anything else. That's my personal opinion. You don't have to accept that. You just say there's a bunch of names. And these women like these names. And women name these names because they have fighting one to another. You know, the two sisters fighting, name, over name. Want to outname the names because they were fighting with one another. And so we look at that, you know, oh, they two women, yeah, ready to do it. No. It's God. Yes. Right.
He's got to talk and think the way we think. These were all symbolic of what he was really doing.
That's what I see. That's what I understand.